Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
When I was a kid, I really liked touching people's elbows to the point of it being kind of weird.
What do you mean by like?
I would like touch them and squish them and like run past them and just grab their elbows and run away. It was weird. I was an elbow addict.
A weenus addict.
A what?
A weenus. That's what the skin on your elbow is called.
Oh, that makes me feel a lot worse about it.
I'm Dan Nalen, and you've tuned in to Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest and independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. In this episode, we'll be talking to Al Dine Strychnine about his career here in Salt Lake City and his interview that he did with the boards. And we'll be talking to the Salt Lake Spitfires, a Salt Lake City punk band who just underwent a little re-emerging from some tragedy earlier this summer. We are here with Al Dine Strychnine, a punk rock staple in Salt Lake City since, what are we going to say, the 80s, or should we go back further than that?
Well, I think it's probably 1980 or 81 is when I sort of got out onto the scene.
Okay, and we have that you were a member of dozens of bands. I would say that's probably a low estimate over the, 20, 30 years we're talking about here.
It's a long time, so, you know, well, probably so. I don't know. You know, that's a good number to start with.
Okay. Why don't we start with sort of your beginnings? Why don't you tell us a little bit about sort of your arrival in the music scene of Salt Lake, your recognition that there was a scene, and sort of getting involved with it at
the
beginning.
So I moved here from upstate New York in 1978. While I was there in New York, there was a radio station that was an album rock station that played album sides. And it was pretty much hippie and New Riders of the Purple Sage and Allman Brothers and Flying Burrito Brothers and stuff like that. But it was different than commercial radio. And then it took me a while. In 1979, I heard Brad's show on KRCL. I'm hearing Discharge, and it's like, fuck the fucking system, you know, and I'm hearing that over the radio, and I'm just like, well,
that's not New Riders of the Purple Sage.
Can they say that on the radio? But, you know, I already had, like, my brother was a hippie in the 60s, and when I was 10 years old in 1969, my brother went to Woodstock, and I really wanted to go.
Oh.
So I had the protest, hippie aspect thing.
Anti-authority vibe.
Bob Dylan, anti-authority, that kind of stuff. Folk singers, Woody Guthrie, that kind of stuff. And when I was like 10, so when I heard the punk, I was just like, wow. You know, I heard 1, 2, 3, go, I got an ego, it won't let me go, what am I gonna do? A, B, C, D, you know, it's just
right.
Like, oh, I'm hearing this stuff, and it's just like, wow, this is really awe-inspiring and really cool, you know. And then I sought Brad out. I had a couple of friends that were crazy punk rockers that I met. People would be doing the worm, and these guys would be stomping on
them. Right,
and
right.
They were like the Nazi punk
guys, yeah, yeah.
Whatever. But, and they were buddies of mine. I wasn't really into that and like
sure.
that, but it was really cool. It was, you know, I started going to shows and stuff, and actually the first band I was in was called The Scats, and it was like a punk rockabilly kind of band.
Oh, nice.
And we opened up for The Suburbs, and they were a band from the Mid-East, or
the Midwest?
Midwest.
Minneapolis, yeah?
Like,
were they Minnesota
right,
scene,
yeah,
I think?
Exactly,
yeah,
right. That's what I mean.
Like a little older than the Husker Du guys.
And yeah. We opened up for them, and we played with, there was also a band called 004 that we played with
sure.
from here, the ska band from
yeah.
here. We got to be really good friends with those guys. I went on tour with those guys in 1980, 81, and we saw the Bad Brains in California
oh, nice.
in 1981, and you know, that all that stuff just built and built,
sure.
and it was just like, wow. And then after the rockabilly band, there was a band called Spencer Kimball and the Brainwashed.
Nice.
And, you know, I don't know if what you can say on the podcast. Can you say anything you want to say?
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, there was some songs like Spencer Kimball's Dying, like he's so old he shits his pants, but Spencer Kimball's still their man.
Right.
The leader of the Mormon faith is in control, they say, but every time I see him, it looks like he's passed away.
Right.
You know, the guy was like 90 years
yeah,
old.
Yeah.
He was the head of the
church. The needle to predominant populace here. Right?
There was another one that's like Mormons on bikes. They should be riding trikes. They got white suits and ties. They don't know when to die. You know?
Yeah, right.
It was really punk rock stuff. You know,
right? And being snotty kids
to the
in Utah,
area here. You know, to with the area anywhere. There's a big clomp down authority.
Yeah.
Clomp down. There's a big underground.
Absolutely.
Of course, and that thrived here. And then 83 was Maimed for Life, and then 83 to 86 or 7, we played with DRI in California at Fender's Ballroom with Swa, Boneless Ones, DRI, Hyrax. You know, it was like six bands on the bill, and we opened, and people were just, there was 900 people there, and they're skanking around from the very beginning.
Right.
I mean, and people are, and Chuck Dukowski comes up to me and goes, wow, man, you guys are really cool.
The energy here, right? Yeah.
And, you know, from Chuck, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah. Yeah, right, right. We like that. Yeah, we'll like take that. Well, tell me, what do you think now, you know, this many years later, we're talking almost 30 years now. I mean, do you recognize things within the Salt Lake music scene now that ring true to that era? I mean, obviously, we've gone through many generations of bands.
We've gone through many generations,
but...
and you know, in the early 80s, things were very close-knit and tight, and everybody hung together. And then skinheads came, and straight edge came, and things splintered, and there was all kinds of crap going on, you know, that kind of took away from it all. And now we played a show in the park just in the spring for Earth Jam.
Oh, yeah.
The vibe at that show was the same as the vibe in the old days. There was the street kid punks.
Yeah.
There was the old timer punks. There was just regular, you know, people there too. I mean, because we had fringe people that were coming that were into it, that were like rockers and just like hippies, you know.
Sure.
It was cool.
Looking
everybody
for an other.
Got together.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, it got real splintered there for a while, but at the beginning it was really cool. And I really want to try to keep that thing, that vibe going again.
Yeah.
You know, try to keep that going.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about what you have going musically speaking right now. I know you have multiple projects, but tell me a little about what we were talking about just before we went on the air here.
Well, the thing right now is this brainchild idea that's kind of been adopted from an idea that, like I said, was from the early 80s in England. And it was a reggae, not reggae, I didn't say that, you didn't hear me say that. It was a dub, experimental dub kind of thing that kind of went a lot of different ways and strayed from that genre that I mentioned a minute ago. That has really reggae, that's a bad way to, that puts a moniker on it. You know,
I did
see Bob Marley in 1976 at an old theater in upstate New York. I saw the Kaya tour, you know, so I'm
not
right
a bad route there.
That's, you know, that's not bad either, you know.
Sure.
So I have all these influences. Anyways, this thing that it's just modeled after this collective of musicians. And what I have now is about 10 different musicians where we have one studio where we go and practice, and there's three different projects that come out of it, really. There's this one experimental dub project that's a Suspicious Sound System, and in the one from the UK was On You Sound System.
Okay.
And the head guy for that was Adrian Sherwood, and he was like the producer, sound design guy who put the Quirks on afterwards. You know, there was a band called Tackhead that was a part of it, and that we went to see in San Francisco, and the band just stood there and played, but he was up in the box just moving and turning knobs and setting all these triggers and sounds off the drums.
Nice.
Like, you know, this and that. Really, really, really cool.
Expansive.
And you know, and at that show, Jello Biafra was there, and I have this weird thing with Jello, and Jello came up to me. He's like, well, what did you think of the show? And I'm like, well, I thought it was really great. And he's like, well, you know, I'm a low-tech man, and I really liked it the last time. And I was like, shit.
Right. He's not as lo-fi as he used to be.
It's kind of like that. It's kind of all good, you know.
Okay.
It's three different projects kind of in one. There's a punk rock band, there's a slow kind of a rock punk band, and then there's the Suspicious Sound System that kind of does the
expansive,
the dub kind of experimental stuff.
Well, Elvine, you not only are here just to tell us about yourself and your music, but you did an interview for Slug here of the Boards and Ron Ward. Can you tell us a little bit about that band and kind of what appeals to you with those guys?
Yes, Ron Ward and I got together. Ron Ward did the recording of it, and Ron Ward had a show on KRCL called No Guarantee back in the old days. He'd be playing Coil and stuff like that, birthday party, stuff like that. You know, stuff you don't hear on the radio.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
The good stuff. Right. Stuff right. You want to hear.
That you want to hear. Anyways, that you ain't going to hear.
Ron and I, Ron did the recording, and I got the boards to actually did this festival in down in Torrey, and I did it 2 years ago. And a band that I was in had the singer from the boards in it. He's from New York City.
Yeah.
And so there was the New Evils, and we played it. And then there was just a little hint of, you know, maybe you guys should come, and maybe the board, ha ha ha, the board should get together and come and play it next year. And then it just went under the rug. It just, you know, it just, it's like, well, you know, that's never going to happen, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So I'm trying to figure out who I'm going to have for my this year's show, and I really wanted to have that ringer, like I was trying to get the Masker guys with Steve-O back together. You know, ultimately, like the Descendants, maybe, or something
right,
like that,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know? People we know.
Sure.
A little help from my friends is what the moniker on this thing is.
Right.
And so the boards actually contacted me. Danny contacted me.
Oh, nice.
He said, hey, what do you think about the boards playing your show? And I'm like, yeah, for sure. Let's do it. And I didn't, still was kind of wary whether it was going to happen, you know.
Yeah.
He came to town, practiced for like a week, and played the show, and it was awesome, man. I couldn't believe it happened. It was like everybody was like, "How in the hell did you pull that off?"
Excellent.
Yeah,
so your interviews with Ron.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's give a listen to that right now.
The first time I recall seeing the boards was at the Roxy. How did that little scene kind of come about in 79, 1980, and sort of growing?
Oh, well, yeah, you know, we used to, like, look for shit to do, and we hear about stuff. We heard about, like, Mike Kirkland's band, like, Weezer McDowell's. I went to a couple of shows, and we just, like, you know, we started talking to Steve and, like, Mike and everybody. And, like, Stevie had his thing going with bands at the Roxy, because one of you guys come down to play. So that weekend, we came down and played. Called Monroe up. We didn't have a singer. And, I knew him from before. You know, these dudes used to jam. Let's see. He said, hey, you want to sing? He goes, yeah, sure. So we went down. Like, yeah, it just came about like that. You know?
A lot of guys were in different bands and in the same bands. You know, the Informers, for instance, with Susan Brown.
Brad Collins.
Right?
And Brad on drums, that's yeah. right.
Brad, who still's playing to this day.
To this day.
He's playing with his 15-year-old kids in his crust punk band. Pretty soon he's going to be, like, not taking showers and having crusty underwear that stand up in the corner.
He's threatening, yes, he is. Good old discoid A, yeah. But in the time, there was Willie Tidwell and Modern Hygiene, love those guys.
The Plants.
And No Rods.
No Rods.
Nightmare and Wax.
Yeah, Nightmare and Wax.
Leisure Medallions.
That's Angle. Yeah. Angle.
It was Leisure Medallions
there was
that caused
Big
all
Fish.
Of that. That's how everybody knew that.
They
Big
caused Fish. It. Did you hear that? Leisure Medallions caused it. That's what Danny said.
That's how everybody, that's how us met up with all of them. You know, going to those.
So it all points at It all points to Mike Kirkland.
That was the bridge. That was the bridge.
Mike Kirkland.
That was the bridge. My bridge was Tater. I had the Bad Element, the guy who stomped people's feet and broke Chester's ankle. He was my, the Nazi punks were my in. It's kind of a fucked up thing.
I always thought McAllister's place was the center.
No, for, yeah, well, the basement with all the naked pictures, all the pornography on the walls.
For years.
Yeah, like, late 70s.
For years I'd be like in record stores going through cutout bins just looking for anything.
Grab the shirt off of
it. It's like that's what, like, actually talked to Stevie. You know, we said we had this band, and we really didn't. And we sort of threw it together and went down.
Well, and Steve kind of, yeah, that's how we, I mean, like Masker guys, just kind of joke theoretical band, and then Steve snuck us into the Roxy, and we saw you guys and the Atheists, and it was like, shit, you gotta ramp it up here. This is cool.
We gotta
get a game on. But so, I mean, you guys were a huge influence on.
Well, yeah, there's
and everybody. I think these guys were some of the major predecessors of the whole thing of what went on around here.
There's hardly nobody you guys' age.
The idea, you know, these guys
was into anything but their music of their fathers, like Led Zeppelin and shit. You know, we used to wonder, like, well, where's all the kids around here? Like, why aren't they into anything? Why they, you know, why they're listening to that? You know, and Then we met all you guys. You know.
At the time, the whole disco thing was still in full swing.
And what about, you know, it seemed to me, I remember if you were from a different part of the valley, like there's some, like if you were from Salt Lake, you were cool, but if you were from West Valley or Cottonwood, then maybe not so cool.
We're from fucking that, Midvale.
Yeah, right? So how did...
That's about as not cool as you can get.
Won't you buy it for me? I know it doesn't like me. So won't you buy it for me?
So 30 years later, how does this all come together that you're out here in Salt Lake City?
Al had something
to do with it. That's kind of a good story.
Come out from New York to go to the desert and play rock and roll.
Let me tell you something.
In 30 years, so let's hear this story.
Denny calls me up. He says, Mike, you want to play drums in the Dwarf?
That's what I did, yeah.
And I said, well, you can't do that. Oh, I'll do it. I said, sure, I'll do it. And so I'm sitting there thinking one day, well, what about Boo? So I get on Facebook and I find Boo and I say, hey Boo, Denny's getting the boards back together. Do you want to play drums? Are you in? He said, damn right, I'm in.
He was the most gung-ho of anybody. All of a sudden he was like, yeah, I'm in. If that's the thing that came out of his mouth. Yeah. I sat around for a week thinking, oh, Boo would be interested. And I hadn't seen him in like, I don't know, 14 years at the time. But we threw something out there. I threw something out there a long time ago, and then I heard a rumor that Denny had talked to everybody that boards were going to try to play at this show that I did in Torrey. And then I heard from Denny, he called me. I was surprised. I was like, oh, it's a phone call from Denny. And he's telling me that boards are going to try to play. He's like, well, I need to go and do this and this, but I think the boards are going to try to play. And I was like, yes. And then I had to pump it. And then I was pumping it before they even came here and practiced, and I knew what the fuck was going to happen. And I was like, oh, well. But you know what? They sounded great. They really did. Down in Torrey, it was fucking killer, too, man. It was a really great time. We had a great time down there. We had everybody out in the desert. That was good.
Okay, here's my question. What was the Silver Cloud?
Okay, the Silver Cloud was this rock bar on State. And it was one of them rock bars where these cover bands would play five sets a night, and it had to be certain songs. They even had a rule posted on a wall, like no original music. They would fire bands if they sneaked in an original song. And, you know, they were around for a long time. You know, you had to have this audition to play there and shit. Like, people like us could have never fucking played in there. Somebody made a flyer. We didn't make it. Somebody made a flyer one time that said, Too Loud for the Silver Cloud. And had all these bands playing at the Roxy on it. People used to hang out. The place was defunct before all this. The people who were attached to that place used to come down to Roxy and fuck with everybody, like throw shit at you, you know, like who said this, who put this flyer up, you know, we're looking for them, you know, it's like shit, man.
Too Loud for the Silver Cloud.
Yeah, so we took the name from that, you know, from that flyer, you know. But yeah, we knew it, you know, we just
made it. I assumed, because that was the name of the record, the Boards album, and I assumed it had to be some kind of there's a story behind it.
It came from whoever put that flyer together to post it, plastered it all over town, and people came down to like beat on us because they thought we did it.
That was Al Dine Strychnine's conversation with the Boards. Now we're going to play a little song from their album Too Loud for the Silver Cloud. This song is called I'm a Wreck. I'm a wreck. That was The Boards' I'm a Wreck from Too Loud for the Silver Cloud. For more information on the band, visit them online at myspace.com. Yes, you heard me say it. myspace.com/TheBoards of Utah. This is the weekly daily calendar of Slug Magazine, which of course you can find every day, all day at slugmag.com. If you want to enter your own events to the calendar, you can send those in for free. You can also pay a little bit of something something and get some added media, a photo, a little multimedia. $5 a month, $50 for the year, and you can spruce up your listings right and left. On Tuesday, November 27th, a fine little indie rock band out of Cincinnati, Ohio, which really is kind of a wasteland. I've lived right near there, and they have had some decent bands come out of there through the years. Walk the Moon is one of them. They're playing at Kilby Court. Their self-titled debut is out just now, composed of many original tracks from an old album called I Want, I Want, and a few new ones written specifically for this new record. Definitely a worthwhile evening at Kilby Court on Tuesday. Wednesday, November 28th, and Thursday, November 29th, Joshua James, Provo's own, by way of Nebraska, my old stomping grounds, playing a couple shows at Velour down in Provo. You'll probably get a heavy dose of From the Top of Willamette Mountain, his new record that came out earlier this month. These are semi-official CD release shows. Should be good. They'll probably both be sold out, so be sure to get your tickets a little early if at all possible. Then, Friday, November 30th, it's a full night. You can go see Salt Lake favorite Starmy up at Brewski's in Ogden, another one of my old stomping grounds. A fine bar, a very fine band with Mike Sartain leading the charge. The Killers, the band that has some sort of amorphous links to Utah, thanks to the lead singer. They're headlining their show down in Orem. That'll be a big show. It'll be interesting to see how big their crowd is down there in Orem this time of year. The Christmas Carol musical is opening up at Pioneer Memorial Theater, and that means it's official. We are into the holiday season, hard as it is to believe. At the same time, down there at Velour in Provo, Mindy Gledhill, a fine pop singer-songwriter, she's doing a Christmas show herself at Velour on Friday the 30th, so there's no denying the spirit. You might as well just dive into it, I would say. Saturday, December 1st, one of our local raconteurs, Stephen Brown, is throwing a WTF fundrager, and I like the name of that, at the Rose Wagner. Stephen Brown dance does a lot of really edgy contemporary dance, a lot of humor involved, and at this event you have a lot of great food from top restaurants around town, you get a live performance from the dance group, and there's a cool silent auction. It's a big fundraiser for Stephen Brown dance, one of the great local organizations worth supporting. That's at the Rose Wagner on Saturday, December 1st. Also on Saturday, December 1st, and bleeding into Sunday, December 2nd, for all you people speaking of the holidays, it's an open house up at Red Butte Gardens, so you don't need to pay a cover charge to go enjoy tromping around in the snow in the hills. You can also check out a lot of arts and crafts from local artisans, pick up some stuff to knock your families off your shopping list. Great time to go check out Red Butte for free, and that doesn't come around very often. And finally, Monday, December 3rd. You know, it's family home evening. It might be a good chance to get a cheap ticket to the Utah Jazz LA Clippers game. We have a lot of basketball fans here at Slug. We got to have Mike Brown in here sometime to do a little chit-chat about the Jazz season as it unfolds. So check into that. You might be able to get a cheap deal. Those are your weekly daily calendar events for the week of November 27th. Be sure to go to the mag, slugmag.com, and check the listings every day. There's always something new for you. Right now we're going to listen to a song from the Salt Lake Spitfires. This is called Sick Puppy from their debut EP, Chaos Baby.
Cause I
That was Sick Puppy from the Salt Lake Spitfires from their debut EP, Chaos Baby, that came out earlier this summer. We have the band right here in the studio. They put out their CD this August, and shortly thereafter, lead singer Mike Klein passed away. But the band continued on, and we're going to hear how that worked out and what they're up to right now. First of all, let's just say hello to everybody, and I'm going to have everybody, we'll just go in a little semicircle and have y'all introduce yourselves. Let's start with you.
Hey, I'm David.
Hey, I'm James.
My name's Ivan.
And I'm Becca.
Well, let's start. David, can you just tell us a little bit about that period when, you know, the band's record is done, it's getting released, and then the lead singer passes away and you guys have to kind of pick up the pieces and move forward? How did that work?
It was a tough situation because, I mean, Mike wasn't, I mean, he was our singer, but he was also a good friend of mine since we were 16. I'm really glad that we got this CD done before he died, because now there's something, you know, that he really loved.
Yeah.
That he did, that, you know, he has to leave with everybody, leave on the earth, I
right.
guess, you know.
Well, it's going to last through that CD.
So I'm sure glad that that we got that wrapped up before he died. And it's just a really tough year. A lot of people that were doing a lot of drugs back in the 80s, you know, want to keep living that lifestyle and,
right.
and get out of it for a while and then get back into it and don't know where their tolerance at is. They think they're doing the same thing they've been doing for 20 years, but they're doing something that's going to kill them.
It's a different thing, right? No.
It's pretty sad. Yeah, we had two friends this summer, actually.
It's been a scary time, and kind of a recurring thing, like you said, in the Salt Lake scene over the last couple of years, it seems like, which is scary. And obviously, you know, the first inclination from you guys may have been like, what the hell do we do now, or what do we do? How do you go from kind of mourning your friend's death to, okay, we have a good thing happening here, and we like the combination of people that we're working with and we're making great music? How do you say, all right, well, we're going to pick it up?
It broke down right to the core. The band originally started over 7 years ago.
Mm.
It was Tough Titty for a number of years.
Yeah.
We had a split and did a name change shortly after Mike came on board. After Mike died, both of the guitarists split.
Mm.
We've got a whole new lineup now other than me and Becca,
me
the original
too, yeah.
members. So,
okay.
But I've never been more excited about a band in my life than I am about this band. I mean, it's fantastic music, and there's no way Mike would want us to stop, and
right.
no way we would anyway. I mean, it's what we do.
Sure.
Know?
Becca, can you speak to that a little bit as the other original member here in the group? I mean, that period where, you know, you two have obviously probably had to make decisions about what you're going to do together before bringing these guys in.
Yeah, we both just agreed that it's something that Mike would want us to do anyways. Like, we wouldn't be doing him any favors not to continue playing the songs that he wrote. And we were doing it before he was in this band, and we're going to continue to do it.
Okay. And so what was the next step for you guys? I mean, did you already know Ivan and James? Did you know you wanted to stick with the name and the style? Did you think about...
You know, there's actually a fifth that's not with us
okay.
tonight. But Greg from an old band that was an old band with Mike back in the 80s called Rid Mission. And that's how we all met through Mike. We met Greg, and then after Mike passed, we invited Greg on board.
Okay.
We met Ivan. He's our international secret weapon.
Gotta have one of those in the band.
Yeah,
just moved here.
Yeah, we moved to America for what, 2 months, 3 months?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
all right.
And then we were talking with Greg. We decided to do another shift. All these changes from going from Tough Titty, then losing Mike. Every time, my opinion is, every time you change the singer of a band, you change the image, the face, the sound,
sure.
the whole band. And I was tired of doing that constant change.
You're right.
So I moved up front, and we got a different drummer.
Yeah.
And this is Julio from Drop Dead Julio. I bet a lot of people
yep.
have heard of them.
Sure.
And so it's just a fantastic lineup now, and we're moving forward.
Okay. Now, and how did you guys, I mean, did you know the backstory of the band before you were involved, or obviously you probably do it to some degree, but did you see it as something kind of daunting to hold up this a band that had been in existence, obviously gone through this dramatic shift just this summer, to be joining something like that? Was it?
I'm still kind of piecing most of it together. I hear about it a little bit here and there, you know,
yeah.
trying to, you know, get songs down and
right.
get a lot down. So I hear the stories here and there, you know, in between and whatnot. So I'm kind of, you know, still kind of learning everything that went on.
Okay.
I didn't know any of them before I came into this. I'm actually friends with Greg,
right.
the guitarist that he brought back in, and I used to work with him, and that's how
okay.
you know, Greg just called me and decided, hey, you want to come down and try out for this band? So I was like, all right.
All right. Mm-hmm. Ivan, how about you?
I was just looking for a band, and David came to my house, and straight away the first day he was telling me everything about the band. I was fascinated and a little bit scared. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, what is this? And then I listened to the CD and I was on.
They were hooked. They were ready. Did it feel right when you got you five together? Did it feel like a brand new thing? Did it feel like a continuation of the band?
It just new, improved. I mean,
and obviously you're out front, so that's really a little new for you.
It's a lot different. Yeah. Than being back behind the drums and being right up front, it is a lot different. I like it a lot. But as far as the new sound goes, I mean, you listen to the stuff on that CD, and we still have the same flavor. I think we have a little bit more. I'd say a little bit more of a metal edge right now.
Okay.
And like this drummer can do a lot better than I ever did. I mean, he's got a double bass going and stuff.
Oh, all right.
Just out of my skill range.
Right, right.
So it's
evolving naturally.
It really is improving, I think.
Okay.
I mean, I'm totally stoked.
Are you often writing new material already as you play and get the chops up?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. How about in terms of live shows? Have you done much yet with this lineup, or are you just kind of getting the ball rolling with that?
Not a thing.
What's in the cards?
We're still putting our set together. We've got a New Year's show planned with Aldine. We're not supposed to leak it, but there should be some good stuff coming at that show. New Year's Eve at Burt's. That's going to be one hell of a party.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Tell me about sort of just the challenge of writing as a band. I don't know if Mike was writing some of those songs, obviously. Was he writing all the lyrics? Was that a joint effort between different people? Or
whoever brings something to the table. I mean, a lot of the stuff, songs I wrote, a couple of them on that. It's only an EP.
Sure.
So there's only six songs to deal with total. But
yeah.
He wrote two of them and helped me on a third. And
okay.
Whoever, anybody can, there's no official one's
right.
job to write the songs. I mean, everyone's got their own instrument. That's their job.
Yeah, right.
When it comes
right.
to lyrics, I mean, if someone brings something to the table that works, we'll use it, sure.
Okay.
I like other people's contributions
sure.
to get more depth.
You know, obviously you guys are woodshedding right now and getting ready to get out there. Have people who knew the old version of the band, have they gotten to listen a little bit at all? And have you gotten any feedback from people?
We've had a couple people come to some practices, and everyone seems to be liking what we're doing. So
yeah.
We're excited.
So far, so good on that score.
It keeps coming back.
Do you have a kind of a big picture vision of that maybe was even in play in the old configuration, but is there a big picture vision that you have of where you'd like to see this band kind of get to or go from here? Or is it, do you want to be a touring entity? Do you want to be, you know, get another CD out as fast as you can? What do you think of those things?
Boy, that brings up a whole...
those are big picture conversations.
Obviously, I want to take it as far as I'll go.
Yeah.
I mean, that's we put a lot of work, a lot of years, a lot of effort and sacrifice to doing this band, or music in general. And someday I would just love to quit my crappy job and make a living making music.
Get out on the road.
That would be awesome. You also have to temper that with a couple children. You know, things of that
those
nature.
Real life things that those go on in the world. Things,
you know, but you know, I mean, there's been plenty of famous people that were plenty good parents too. That did plenty of touring. So
absolutely.
I mean, we'll take it as far as it'll go, and we'll work out the details on the way.
Is there anyone you look out in terms of music wise? Anyone you look to as, you know, someone you admire, or someone who that maybe they've handled their career a certain way, even if the music isn't what you're particularly interested in? Or
there are a lot of bands.
Yeah.
Between all five of us, we have a different answer. So
a big sprawling.
We all kind of come different backgrounds. So
yeah.
So Rebecca and, you know, David, you know, the other three of us come from much different backgrounds.
Yeah, why don't we go into that? I mean, Becca, what's your sort of your root music that you came from that made you want to play music?
Oh, I'm going to pass.
She's a little gangster.
Gangster rap?
She loves
country?
Come on. Hey,
I love hip hop. That's all right. Ivan, how about yourself? I mean, what kind of stuff inspired you to play?
What I used to listen to has nothing to do with this. It's like I'm more into death melodic metal from north of Europe and these kind of things, really extreme and loud, and has nothing to do with this, but still it's like, I don't know, it's like I'm approaching songwriting in a different way than when I was in Spain in my previous band.
Okay.
So it's like, I don't know, I'm growing as a musician, I think.
Well, I think most people who are musicians and or just love music obviously have a ridiculous wide array of things that sinks in one way or another. James, how about you? What's the kind of stuff that got you into playing?
Oh, when I started playing to the Beatles. I'm kind of self-taught when I started. So started with the Beatles and like all the old rock, like Aerosmith, AC/DC, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And kind of grew in more into the punk rock scene for a while there. And then some more hip-hop and death metal and just rock and roll. I've done it all.
Keep spreading out.
I love playing. My biggest thing when I started playing, though, is I hated seeing, you know, drummers just sitting back there looking bored. I like to bring the show and stuff, and I like to like wave my fingers everywhere and
set some things on fire here.
Crazy,
and there.
So.
Yeah, excellent.
That's what I'm into.
All right, David, yourself.
Oh boy,
reaching deep.
I love it all. Obviously, I was raised on punk rock. You know, grew up here in Salt Lake in the '80s, and that's just always going to be my passion and my base.
Yeah, the roots.
But it would be such a boring world with only one type of music out there. I just like good music.
Didn't you find, I mean, back in even that 80s SLC punk seed, I mean, the punk was more an ethos even than a sound in a way. I mean, there were a lot of different bands that were, there were punks in town, but it seemed like they weren't all just doing the 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, there was a little ska or a little this kind of thrown into the mix here and there.
Yeah, and that's one thing I hate to see is I see a lot of bands, like, as they get really good and start like doing something with their band and with their music, they try to disassociate themselves from the quote punk rock.
Yeah.
Because if everybody does that, then punk rock really is going to be nothing but 1, 2, 3, 4.
Right.
You know, just the,
yeah, by the numbers.
You know
stuff.
What I mean? I mean, right. Everything from the Butthole Surfers to Christ on Parade. I mean, everything in between.
It's right.
There's so much out there, and that's the way I like to see the scene. You know, call it punk, underground, whatever. That's what I like, is some variety and some depth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you guys really appreciate the time. Thanks so much for coming in. And everybody can find more information about the band where?
Facebook right now, I think, is what we got going right now.
Get on the Facebook and drop a search for Salt Lake Spitfires.
Salt Lake Spitfires, you'll find it.
Excellent. All right, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Soundwaves from the Underground. For all things Slug Magazine, be sure to visit slugmag.com. What's your favorite all-ages venue in Utah? We'll be doing an upcoming episode on all-ages and underground venues, and we'd like to hear what your favorite spot is. You can either send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. You can leave a message 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we just might play what you say on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. Associate producers are Esther Moronio, Ricky Vigil, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. Executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. The main logo and art design are done by T. Doan, and technical design is by Kate Colgan. Join us next week when we'll be talking about winter beers with the folks from Hopper's Brewery. Yelp will be here in the house to talk about Jewish food around the holidays. And we'll talk about winter films and potential Oscar bait with Jimmy Martin, Slug Magazine's own. Once again, thanks for listening. This has been Soundwaves from the Underground.